now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Ra Castaldo, an old buddy of mine. Ra is a poet, songwriter, lifelong martial artist and coach, dream seer, oracle reader, and radio host. Raised in the old ways as a hereditary Strega and shaman, his family has been protecting ancient secrets regarding Lake Nemi in Italy for thousands of years. He is a gifted psychic and has been communicating with spirits and other planes of existence since his near-death experience at the age of 9. Since this awakening in 1987, he has reactivated dormant particles inside his DNA and has found access to Gaia's holographic library, Akashic Records. Since birth, he has been hunted down for his abilities and family genetics bloodline and is ready to discuss his paranormal journey and the secrets of his lineage that he has been protecting. Join Ra every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on his show Spiral Radio as he brings us down the mystical spiral of life. Ra's website is themysticalspiral.com and his YouTube is Exploring the Ka with Ra. Ra Castaldo. So without any further ado, my good buddy, Ra Castaldo, how are you, buddy?
Hey, James. It's a pleasure to be on again. I really appreciate it. And I'm actually really excited and kind of anxious to get some of this out. You know, we are good buddies, and I saved a lot of interesting info and intel, especially for your hour two for subscribers, too. And I'm really looking into just getting a lot of this off my chest, a lot of stuff I've been working on and thinking about. And yeah, I'm excited to be here. Cosmic Switchboard.
What did you want to talk about? I know you sent me some information over, and there was a lot of stuff there to cover. And you know, my head just did like a, you know, 360 on a swivel. Wow, this is going to be like a barn burner of a show. So what did you want to talk about right off the bat, Ra?
A series is probably best, and because there is just endless stuff to talk about. But you know, there's just so much going on, James, and I really feel that like right now is one of the most crucial times in Gaia's history for our humanity, basically. And we are, what's happening right now on Earth, or Gaia, is basically going to affect all of the universe. And it's basically, we have become a society based on fear.
Yes.
Whether you want to call them the fallen angels, Draco, Anunnaki, whatever it is, these beings have installed fear into our psyche. And fear, you see, fear, James, is basically a stalking murderer. When fear gets installed in your mind, when it gets deep-rooted and deep-seated back there, and it spreads, and certain chemicals in your body get activated from this fear, and it fills the body, and activating a downward spiral to death. And once this happens, even diseases can be spread electromagnetically.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're thinking you got cancer, and then you have cancer. I mean, this is what fear is. It gets installed in our brain, and it's implanted in there like a memory, and as it festers, and as it sits with you, and even if you're looking in the mirror in the morning, it's whispering in your ear something about, even if maybe somebody commented in when you were a child about your nose or your smile, and then when you're there, that fear of your physical body it's whispering in your ear, and it becomes a boogeyman on your soul, and it becomes a monster in the astral. And if you don't battle these monsters, and if you don't face these fears, then it will corrupt your whole being, and you will stop your spiritual ascension.
Yes, and we see this repeated endlessly over and over and over. The ridiculous hive consciousness, herd immunity, meme that's put out where, like, oh yes, we believe in these vaccines. That's why we're, irreparably damaging our children with vaccines. But no, that's not good enough. You have to damage your children, because if you don't damage your children, then our children can't be protected by the vaccines. Everything is just warped and it's distorted and it's all based on fear. This whole concept. And like, look at the psychopaths that are recruited in the black ops and in law enforcement. They have psychological studies, as you know, Ra. They make the wannabe cops go through a psych eval, yeah. several hundred questions, asking the same question several different times. What they're looking for is aggression, and they're looking for a bit of cowardice, too, because they know that if these people are given the power of a badge, if they're giving the power of a large, moneyed-up, lawyered-up institution behind them, they can just be turned loose, and all of the, whatever angst and fears that they have, and all the fear programming is exacerbated during training. So they're taught to be fearful of everything, right? This is basic. It's basically Israeli training because countless American cops are sent to Israel where they, you know, get to watch what the Israelis do to the people in Gaza and Palestine. And then they come back thinking, good, now we can do this to the American people. And so everything is based on fear of, you know, their own mortality. But it's combined in that example with this kind of bully boy, arrested development kind of mindset. And so we see, Ra, this concept of the victim aggressor. We see it all across the board where these people that, it, like I said in the example earlier, it's not enough that they're going to damage their own kids and damage their own bodies with vaccines. That's all well and good if that's what they want to do. Sad, but if they want to do that. But because of the fear, they try to impose their will on everyone else. They try to bully boy and shame and hector and badger everybody else. So it's all based on fear. Everything about the Old Testament is this reptilian blood god Yahweh who's imposing fear on his minions. Oh, go down to the next valley and kill those people because they're, well, just kill them because they're bad and they're scary and they're going to do harm to us.
Yeah, and you know what? These fallen angels or Draco or Anunnaki, whatever you want to label them, they are what gave us fear. This is what gave us fear. And when we have fear, we vibrate at a lower frequency, you know, and it keeps us more easily controllable. And this is what they want to keep us at. And this is why I feel that when we were created, when our, I mean, these beings were genetically altering primates, you know, and adding, you know, DNA to primates that from, you know, that have off-world origins. And when they realized that we had this divine spark inside of us, I really feel like they assigned us these astral guardians, letting us know that we have archonic influence and rulers, letting us know that we have somebody to keep us in check, and there's consequences. And everything on our physical world is about control, James. I mean, if you think about it, even electricity is the control of electrons. I mean, everything on our planet that's energy is controlled. I mean, even the Bible and religion, they talk about how they'll even say if something happens on Earth, like a storm or this, oh, it was the will of God. Oh, it was the will of your controller, they're telling you, right? So basically, religions and everything that keeps, if you want to say, a limit on our consciousness is based around control. And I believe that even these religions were handed to us to control us and to control us in our soul time or our dream time or our astral time and to keep our consciousness in prisons. And if you would leave, say you leave your body in astral form and you look down on Earth, you'll see against the firmament is cubes, these cubes. And in the astral, a cube is a form of a prison. And each cube is the Mormon church, the Catholics, the Christians. Yeah. All these little religions are cubes and prisons for our consciousness. And this is why even the Ten Commandments was handed to Moses by these Orion groups or by these Anunnaki or Draco to give us laws to live by and a ruler to follow, you know? And even if they seem benevolent, it has negative undertones. It's letting you know you have a controller. You have somebody above you. You have laws to live by now, right? It's all about control. And that's why religion was designed for control of over your consciousness. Because these Draco, these beings, when they realized we had that divine spark, and now that we are these beautiful creatures that can tap in to the lower and the higher realms, like no other species on this planet, you know, so when they saw this and they realized that we have this amazing divine spark and the power within us, they gave us these astral guardians, these controllers to watch over, to keep us in check, make sure we don't spiritually ascend any higher than them, you know, so we're always controlled. And that's why I feel we have this lore of like goddess Diana and these gods and goddesses, because they are actually these astral guardians over us, or astral guards, or archons, or whatever you want to call them. And they're here to give us fear, you know, to lock down our consciousness so we do not spiritually evolve. And the proof that we are psychic beings, the existence of our psychic abilities, the proof is in the pineal gland. I mean, nature does not put things there for no reason. That's proof that we once had a third eye that was active. The pineal gland is proof, even though it becomes sort of petrified now because it's pretty much no longer in use with most humans, but it's the pineal gland is proof of our psychic abilities existence. And the third race, maybe the Lemurians, us being the fifth root race, totally were bigger in stature. You know, they had height that probably was around 27 feet, that you see things on Easter Island the same size, 27 feet, eight feet with the cross. I mean, these are the size of Atlanteans, or, you know, the Titans, 27 feet high. And this was how big we were during those times. And slowly we became between 5 and 6 feet, and we lost our third eye, so to say. It fell deeper back in the head, hiding beneath the hair, you know, and the existence of those abilities is our pineal gland. And if we can overcome this fear and learn how to spiritually evolve and ascend spiritually and tap into our dream time and our soul time, which is the alpha, even the aboriginals believe this, you know, for thousands of years, James, you know, the dream time, our soul time is the alpha. And if we can learn to connect to that and awaken the light, or light equals information, that's just laying dormant inside of our DNA, you know, then we can really start to become one with Gaia and with ourselves. Because I feel about 300,000 years ago, or, you know, I can't really put a time frame on it, but I'm thinking around that long, that our planet was basically hijacked by the dark side, and they have been giving us religions and giving us all types of prisons to lock down our consciousness. And, you know, the dark side has been basically chasing anyone who explores their consciousness since the beginning of time. Nowadays, it's just the military will abduct you and take your DNA and your blood. You know, a couple hundred years ago, they were frigging burning you in the town square. Now they just, you know, they have more technology, and they're just taking you astrally and taking your blood and your DNA and taking it that way. But it's basically, we've had fear installed in us since our inception.
The methods have just gotten a bit more sophisticated, but in the overall scheme of things, the way the hyperdimensional entities have been doing it has been the same all along. I mean, there's so many people, as you know, Ra, they're locked up in insane asylums, written off as schizophrenics because they're hearing voices in their head. The difference between them and others is that their family tree had been what they would have called in the old days cursed, but we know that has to do with these bogus soul agreements, manipulation, genetic interference, energetic implants and whatnot from many lifetimes ago. And so these people find themselves born into a family that has this underlying genetic neurological vulnerability, right? It just like in an internet security standpoint, there are portholes and holes that these entities can plug into, and that's why they hear all these voices. It's not that they're crazy, it's just that they either haven't been able to screen them out, or there's so many holes in their auric field, so many vulnerabilities in neurology that they can't block them out, and so to the rest of the world, they appear crazy because they're talking, they seem to be talking to themselves, etc., etc., but really, there's another dynamic going on that's unseen, and so it's a perfect barometer to hold up as a reminder to ourselves how easy it is for one to fall prey to this kind of predation, to this kind of manipulation, and also the people that do come under electronic mind control warfare, where they're, you know, the voiceless skull technology, where they're hearing voices. And a buddy of mine in San Diego, he went through this. Get this. Long story short, but he was befriended by some guy, and he didn't realize it at the time, but he was hanging out. He's a surfer. He was hanging out in a merc bar, a mercenary bar, where the CIA goes, and they recruit people to go off in black ops. And back then, it would have been like Central Latin America and different places. So It's possible also that this guy who tried to recruit him was aware of his MyLab abductee background. At any rate, he tried to get my friend to go along with this scheme to smuggle weapons. I can't remember if it was from San Diego into Mexico or vice versa. At any rate, he wanted him to get into this kind of arms smuggling gig. And of course, my friend shot that down and said, "No way, Jose, I'm out of here." And yeah. What happened was he began to get all this voice-to-skull stuff. And the way he described it to me, Raw, it was hardcore John Wayne, Rambo, patriotic stuff, where you have to be a good citizen, you have to be a good American, you have to do what's right by our country. He was just assailed by this inside his mind, voice-to-skull, 24/7. And you know what? God has blessed the guy, but he basically went off the rails, understandable, for a while. And then he wound up getting in a psychiatric ward, placed in a psychiatric ward, where they got him on drugs. And guess what the drugs were? The drugs turned out to be hypnotics. So they get him in there after blasting his mind with voice-to-skull technology, telling him he's a bad, unpatriotic American, and heaping his mind full of really loud in his mind with John Wayne type of flag-waving propaganda. He understandably goes crazy, is thereby plugged into the psychiatric tyranny where they start heaping these hypnotics on him in his medications. So it's an example where a guy does what's right, what his conscience and what his integrity tells him to do. No, I'm not getting involved with this scam of yours, Mr. CIA man. And then they heap all this abuse on him. And we've heard similar stories where people don't want to go along with a certain agenda. Then they start getting beamed electronically, microwaved, etc., etc. So it comes in a variety of forms now, but a lot of it is to induce this fear that you were talking about. And when they talk about paranoid schizophrenics, the paranoid part is the fear part. For example, why is it that meth users always go into a paranoid phase, which basically lasts for as long as their addiction lasts? And even afterwards, because the entities that work through the meth, people really have to understand that meth has a sympathetic resonance rise, you know, with these lower astral, lower fourth dimensional entities.
Yeah.
You know, their meth users begin peeking out windows and seeing shadows. Well, they're really seeing them because they're
picking caverns in their face. You know?
That's right. Because the entities have decided to, well, he's in our frequency bandwidth playground now. Let's really freak him out. Let's flit in and out of his field of vision, in his periphery vision. Let's manifest as shadow beings. Let's make noises. Let's speak into his head, right? All that is real. And so, you know, be thankful, those of you out there that haven't had to deal with that level of interference, because what we just described to you is an extreme example of this paranoia they've pushed. And what they've done is they've put these paranoid psychopaths in positions of influence and power. They're the ones that are now pulling the hidden levers of power, these paranoid, hosty, Draco-infested, reptilian, mantis-infested beings that have all this internal dialogue going on, this incessant chatter from all the multitudes of entities that are talking to them and giving them directions. So, you know, we have our work cut out for us to get out of this fear mode.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, when we start to spiritually evolve and learn to overcome those fears, and when the DNA is awakened inside of us, you know, basically I feel that we're like kind of time coded. And within these codings are these fibers that are fired up, you know, and when we awaken certain information inside of us, we're kind of like time rooted to respond to the blueprint that's like been laid out at our birth. And when we respond and get put on that blueprint and follow that pattern of spiritual evolution, we unlock this library of knowledge within us, and we start to awaken a higher identity and purpose of people on this planet, and we can spiritually evolve together that way. Because basically, like I said, light is information and dark is lack of information. So when you're part of the dark, you're part of having not having information. And so awakening this light inside of us, and, you know, truly understanding that everything affects each plane of existence. What happens here happens you know, below, as above, so below. So the seven planes of existence, like the ultimate plane and the divine plane, the spiritual plane, the mental, the astral, the elemental, and the physical plane, will all be affected like a domino effect. What happens here will totally affect what happens in the astral and vice versa. So when we have fear installed into our genetic memory in this incarnation, it gets imprinted on our DNA and it affects all the planes of existence and it lowers the evolution of the planet, you know. And people don't realize that a lot of things that you see that is real is just an illusion. Time basically is an illusion. And when we're born in this physical plane, we're basically putting an application for a time with the five senses. You know, how long you want to experience in these five senses. We're almost forming a contract to get put into this physical plane so we can apply for some time to experience these five senses. And then when this life is over and that silver cord is cut, we're still that same soul, but we don't experience the five senses anymore. There's no more fear. See, this physical plane has been taught, you know, and brought about all by fear. And we've become a society based on fear. We're always worrying about taxes, this, that. It's always a bunch of fear. And, you know, that's what keeps us at a lower vibration and keeps us controlled. I really feel like these experiences and these technologies and even magic that people think is magic is just soul technology, astral technology that just seems like magic to us. And even though I come from a magic lineage, I realized that it's basically worshiping certain gods of the old is basically a primitive way of looking at astral and soul technology. Even, you know, having like a Merkaba or shape-shifting in the astral, when beings do this, you know, back in the day they would pray to wolf gods and these kind of gods. You know, I don't relate to it by praying to gods. I relate to it by realizing that it's part of my DNA and a part of our DNA. And when certain things are activated, it's you learning about what's really our true abilities that's laying dormant within us. And, you know, just if we went back in time, James, with an iPhone or an Android, people would think we had a magic freaking wand,
yeah.
You know? And that's why sometimes these technologies, these advanced soul and astral technologies, they seem like magic, but it's really just technology that we're not understanding. And I really think that, like, even if you, like, look at the goddess Hathor and these ancient Egyptian gods and goddesses, that they show that Egyptologists say it's the ball of sun between her two horns on Hathor, but I think that's a pure ball of energy, and it's manifesting between her two conductors or horns or whatever. Yes. That technology is, you know. And, you know, that's where we really need to look at these things and really need to, you know, understand these ancient mysteries are locked within our DNA, and these beings all have guardians on our planet. You see, this whole planet is a storage facility. It's a living, breathing library. And all these races from other worlds that are aware of Gaia and its inhabitants have stored information here, and they all have guardians over that information. And when we get into hour two, I'll even talk about these plant humanoids that I've had contact with that have guardians on this planet that we take as plant spirits and different kinds of spirits, but they're really ET races that are using interdimensional and astral technology, keeping us fear-based so we don't have access to the Akashic and the different information that's stored on this planet. You see, basically, James, this is how I look at things. Any ET race that you're having contact with, if you're a human, okay, there's hidden agendas there. You see, I feel any race in this universe that is aware of Gaia and Gaia's inhabitants were forced to join a galactic federation or council, whatever you want to call it. And they chose and agreed to become watchers over this planet, not to interfere with any of us. So if you are getting interacted with by a foreign species to this planet, an off-world entity, then they have gone rogue. Okay, that means they have their own agendas, and even if it seems benevolent, it probably is not in best interest to humanity or your eternal soul. So if you are having contact with entities that are off-planet or interdimensional or extraterrestrial, most likely they have hidden agendas, people, okay? They were forced to be watchers, to be astral guardians, or just to watch over our planet and its information. They were never supposed to interact with us. So if we're interacting with entities, it's because they are rogue, James. You know, people need to understand that. And if you call upon entities, even if it's Archangel Michael, you have signed a holographic contract as soon as you call upon them and as soon as you welcome them to your psyche. I mean, even Archangel Michael, people might think it's all sweet and great, but he's a warrior. I mean, he battled dragons. Dragons, people. That means he has anger. He has rage. He's bloodthirsty. I mean, he's a warrior. Archangel Michael fought Leviathan. He fought dragons. He fought beings that came from the sky and rained down terror. Okay, so he is a warrior. If you call upon an entity like that, that means they need energy to manifest. You have to pay for that. It's not a one-off, okay? Once you call upon any entity, as soon as you have contact, as soon as you welcome them to your psyche and your consciousness, the holographic contract is already signed, and now you owe them.
Yeah, I think about the Norse gods and the Asgard legends, where the Norsemen, the Danes, as they call them also in the old days, they were constantly invoking their gods, like Loki, Thor, Odin, yeah. Right? And what did these gods do all the time? They battled, they warred, they destroyed, they, you know, they schemed, they manipulated. So it's
interesting. Yeah, and look at Odin, he had to lose an eye for knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and he had his drones. He had two ravens that were like warrior drones that went and got him information and
That's
came back
right.
at night.
They went out and they got advanced intel
technology.
For him and brought it back. And also the point about the lower astral. See, one of the ways you know that we've been manipulated is that when some of us first started doing astral experiences, we found ourselves, we realized it much later, that we were just bebopping around the lower astral. We didn't get much higher than that. It was only later, after a lot of self-work and doing what we could to detach from all these control systems, that we began to tap into higher and higher dimensions. Because what happens is the lower astral is filled, is energized with fear, energized at times with sexual energy. So we're flitting around down in the astral realms, and we're thinking that we're really cool, really metaphysical, and we're another kind of Don Juan kind of character, but we're not. We're actually, we think we're leaving our body, but we're actually just going into a lower kind of astral plane. And what I'd like you to comment on, too, because you made a very key point about how technology basically is basically this ghost in the machine form of the manifestation of the demiurge today. It's like all these appliances, all these forms of control, this control grid, basically is a manifestation of this demiurge of this AI, and we're seeing it more and more. Just the other day, and still ongoing, and I talked about this in this week's commentary, which was just released, about this NSA malware that's been turned loose all over the place. They tried to attack the Russians with it, but it didn't work too well because they have a different operating system. They don't believe in Bill Gates and Microsoft and all that AI kind of stuff, right? But in the process, it went around infecting financial computer systems, and you know, people having trouble pulling money out of ATMs in China and in the UK, and things kind of unraveled a bit. Let's see where it goes. But that's a manifestation. And now you make a very good point, Ra, about how we know that they like to piggyback a lot of their modern-day agendas on the ancient lore of the past. For example, Moab, there's this huge explosive they dropped in Afghanistan, right? It's actually the name of a group of people, Moabites, who worship Shamash or Kamash, this ancient pagan blood god which they sacrifice to. Also, CERN. Isn't it a fact, Ra, that CERN itself is a name for some ancient deity slash god or entity?
Yeah. In fact, it's ancient Etruscan lore from that was passed down in my family, that the stories that we got, I think, came from Persia even, too. And these are ancient stories. And basically, it talks about how CERN, he had a brother, Lupus. And on the day of the spring equinox, while hunting a deer, Lupus is struck by like a bolt of lightning. and that was shaped like an arrow, and he died. And then the next morning, he rises from the underworld as the new sun, right? And having learned of his death of his brother Lupus, Cern becomes the god of this world and then reigns in his place on Earth. And left over from Lupus, this lightning bolt that hit Lupus is a wolf skin. And it's found in the forest by like another hunter. And then this pelt or magical wolf skin ends up having powers to transform men into wolves. And the first man to wear this wolf skin of Lupus became a priest of the Lupercus, or the Society of the Lupercai. And these beings, you know, his brother Cern, he represented spring and summer, the light and the dark, and the waxing and the waning seasons. And Lupus is slain during the hunt, in which Cern is the hunted. And then he is slain by a centaur who is given a bolt of lightning for his bow by Dianus, right? And then having been persuaded by his sister Diana, Cern is later slain as well, but on the autumn equinox by Mars during another hunting incident. So it's really interesting that the centaur in the constellation Centaurus is aiming a bow at the constellation Lupus as well. So, I mean, this is all tied in together, and it's no coincidence that Cern, who becomes the god of this world and is battling between light and dark, you know, this facility is also named Cern as well, and they're basically trying to figure out between the light and the dark matter and all the, you know, antimatter and the matter and everything else. So it's like, that's not a coincidence, and I think Cern is truly trying to manipulate the antimatter and tap into these black hole portal networks that we'll talk on later. But yeah, there's an ancient Etruscan god Cern that I really think that the Celtics also called Cernunnos or Cernuus or something like that. It's also a Celtic legend, yeah.
Well, so many of these legends were drawn from the same source or a similar source. For example, there are elements in that story, the Etruscan story, which are familiar to me because of my studies in Roman history. So, and the Romans, whether they want to admit it or not, drew a lot from the Etruscans as they did from the Greeks.
For sure.
Although, whatever vestiges of the Etruscans were left, and the Etruscans seemed to be a somewhat advanced society compared to the Romans and others who came later. But, you know, the story about the she-wolf raising the orphaned Romulus and Remus, and then Romulus and Remus fighting it out for supremacy, and then Romulus slays his brother Remus, founds Rome.
My family originated from right near there in Benevento, where they're from, that town, yeah.
Yes, so, and also, I've been watching, some of the videos of this researcher gal from Turkey, and she talks a lot also about how in their lore, in also in their iconography, their flags, and their motifs, a lot of it relates to the wolf, and in particular, the Sirius constellation. Also, Freeman talks a lot about this too, the role that Sirius plays in a lot of this, because a lot of this was just handed down to us in this solar system on this planet, but really, like you point out, a lot of it originated off-world. After all this time, it made its way over here. Now, you also talk a lot about, Ra, about the Orion Wars and its relevance to what's going on with this today. Did you want to comment on that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think from the beginning of time, we've been at these wars. And since, you know, if we think about it, James, at the beginning of the time, right, everything formed from the collision between light and dark matter, right? So I think everything from then on have been a reflection of that collision. And everyone in the universe and its inhabitants are constantly a battle between light and dark. Every day, even our eternal soul is battling between light and dark on a daily basis. And these wars, or Orion wars, or heavenly wars, if you want to call them, or galactic wars, you know, even taking place astrally, they all have to do with these Anunnaki or Draco, whatever, or Seraphim, whatever you want to label these beings. There's thousands of bloodlines of these beings and hierarchies. There's even seraphic hosts and hosts of these beings. And, you know, the chain of command is endless. It's impossible to put them in one category or even label them all or even to know the true agendas of any of them. But all I can say is I feel like these wars have been about a genetic hunt for genetic information, and that these original Draco were sent here as sort of like a programmed consciousness to infiltrate, terraform, and collect genetic material, and to genetic manipulate and terraform planets to get it ready for their consumption. And these Orion groups or Draco have chased certain genetic lines and races all over the galaxy, including the Lyrans, Felines, Nordics. Outside of the star Vega, there's a whole planetary system. Even if NASA is not aware of it or talks about it, even if it hasn't been found yet, around the star Vega, there's a whole planet. There's a asteroid belt there, and there's a whole system of planets. And upon these planets are different species of plant humanoids and different types of beings that have been chased all over the galaxy. And through these Orion Wars, if you want to call them, these Draco have collected genetic material and basically ended up on Gaia and created man. And these Anunnaki collected all this genetic material, and throughout these wars over time, you know, I mean, it even ended up on Mars for a time, for maybe thousands of years even. And that's why you have these connections with Egypt to these feline races. And in fact, Cairo means camp of Mars. And, you know, I really feel like there was some kind of planet annihilating catastrophe on Mars. And now there's some kind of civilizations that are possibly beneath there or even active on Mars now. But they were chased there at one time and then came here. And through these wars, this metal plasma type being, one of these beings that is represented by the term Leviathan, this being that comes from the cosmic black holes, you know, I feel that through these Orion Wars and all this genetic material that was collected, that somehow from a black stone or some kind of meteorite or some kind of stone material from Aldebaran, this black stone, that the genetic material and this black stone were somehow mixed from this being and created viruses, and viruses arose. Because even when I was talking to my spirit guide and I asked him about where this came from, I was shown the picture of the head of the bull with the one red eye, which is Aldebaran.
Aldebaran, yeah.
Yeah, and it had the goo dripping from the face, this black programmable goo. And I feel that through my research and things that I've pulled in from the astral and been able to back up through my studies and connecting dots, that I, you know, can't prove any of this, of course. It could sound like the tales of a madman that I'm, you know, but I truly feel, because when I come across certain information and then this whole, my whole body responds to it, and it just clicks inside of me, and I know it's right inside of my being, you know. That's why I'm sharing it with you, because I feel like that this virus arose, this programmable matter, this self-replicating goo, this alchemical process that happened either by mistake or on purpose, this being Leviathan, who also has these dragon-type entities that, you know, arise from, you know, whatever this being Leviathan is represented by. And it's talked about even in the Bible, in the book of Job, and even in the book of Enoch, as a dragon that comes from the depths of the ocean.
Yeah,
but I don't
the deep.
But I don't think they mean the I think they're mistranslating it. It's really, I think they're talking about the cosmic sea.
Yes.
That they're coming from the abyss, the black hole. And they also talk about the behemoth, and some say that the behemoth could be a hippopotamus, but some of the descriptions of this behemoth doesn't line up with a hippopotamus either. So that whole behemoth being is another, you know, rabbit hole to go down as well. But this Leviathan being, I really feel that through some kind of alchemy or some kind of alchemical process with this black stone from Aldebaran that may be possibly even linked to the black stone in Mecca, to the Holy Grail, to Solomon's ring, you know, all types of things, this worship of the lords of the black stone who were sacrificing children with the Vril Society over black stones. Even John Dee was scrying in a black stone. I mean, we could go on and on about this black stone. I really feel like that it had originated from this Aldebaran star system, and that this entity somehow through alchemy created this virus, this black goo. And this virus arose, and this virus is not only a self-replicating programmable matter, it also can interweave with technology and spiral DNA. And if the DNA spirals in the DNA like a kundalini type thing up the spinal cord, hits the back of the brainstem, you know, and the black awakening hits the brain and it fills up the black eyes. And that's, you know, where this black eyed children, I feel, even came from. And that this self-replicating programmable matter can take over planets and terraform whole rocks, James. I really feel like that even one of the gray species that we seem was one of the original prototypes of this programmable matter, that they self-replicated a human as this gray black goo, you know, and it has the black awakening eyes, and it's really they're like mind controlled drones collecting genetic material and doing experiments. And I feel like I really am onto something when I talk about this. And these Lyrans that I've had, feline races that we'll talk about probably in hour two, when I've had these astral visits from them, basically they've been chased all over the galaxy by these Draco for the genetic material, and they have been astrally hijacked in a way as well. And there's something going on in the Kuiper Belt as well with these beings. It's like some sort of safe zone they're all gathering in or something. I don't really have too much more information on the Kuiper Belt to talk about there, but I felt a connection to that as well one day.
We also see it playing out on cinema too, where I don't know whether it's due to some kind of spiritual law where they gotta kind of shove our faces into it in the guise of fiction or something. And also Laura Leone, who we'll have on the Switch too, and I believe you also interviewed Laura Leone on your show too, and she talks a lot about the organic black metal. She talks about the black metal. She talks about the black goo, as Harold Kotz-Vella describes it.
Yeah, I recall. In fact, I talked to Laura today. I'm a good friend of Laura's. We have some, actually, my lab experiences together as well that we'll talk about one day. But yeah, I'm a good friend of Laura's, and we were on Zoom earlier today. There might be, I'm not an expert on gray aliens, but there might be several species of them, but one of them for sure, I feel, has been created by this programmable primordial ooze, this crystalline black metal material that can self-replicate anything. And that's why I feel this gray alien was the original prototype, and then they got smarter. They learned how to self-replicate a human child. You know, a child is a lot easier to, and you know, they're out to harvest souls, because you can self-replicate, you know, you could self-replicate the human shell, but you cannot self-replicate that divine spark. So now they're hungry for what a mother's feeling feels like, what a glass of water tastes like, what, you know, what a steak feels like, maybe, or what the five senses feel like. So they're trying to claim souls through soul technology, through eye, ears, nose, and mouth transfer, some kind of transfer through the soul, through the eye windows, through that black awakening. They get you enchanted to them, or something happens, and then they harvest your soul. And if you agree to them and the contract is signed, then somehow they harvest your soul. And yes, and that's what these black eyed children truly are, I feel, is this programmable goo, this crystalline programmable matter. You know, it's the best way to describe it. And some people, you know, hear me talk about this and probably think I'm crazy, but I spent a lot of time researching this, a lot of time meditating on this, and I truly feel that this has been the downfall of prior incarnations of a lot of us. We're infected with this virus, and it might be what was inside of the apple, or a replicated apple when Adam bit into the apple. This might have been a disease, a virus he bit into. You know, gave him all this knowledge, this whatever. It might have been the apple that Adam bit into, might have been part of this virus as well. I mean, it goes deep.
At least some of the grays seem to be nothing more than cyborgs. I know of a case where Daryl Sims, back in the old days, he'd installed a post-hypnotic suggestion to one of the abductees he was working with, so that when the grays would show up alongside this woman's bed, she would not go into like paralysis mode. Instead, she would strive to bring back some proof of the alien's visit. And boy, howdy, did it work. What happened was, one evening, the grays show up, and instead of her going into paralysis mode, she sat up in bed, reached out towards the closest gray, and ripped off one of his black eyepieces. And get this, underneath it was some kind of like red diode thing. I mean, think of like the old cheesy special effects Battlestar Galactica, you know, with Lauren Green way back when, and the Cylons, they had this, you know, red diode kind of eye go back and forth. That's kind of what it was like. behind the eyepiece of that particular alien. Okay.
Yeah.
That particular gray. Not saying all the grays are like that, but certainly some of the other grays do have elements of this hive consciousness, and what they do also.
Yeah, it's hive mind. Sure.
It's hive mind. It's interesting, and it's interesting how they also gave the hive mind to the people here on Earth, where, you know, we were just talking about this also, about this hive consciousness that the normies, okay, our mutual buddy, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, because I always ask, you know, I frequently ask some dear friends out there, you know, okay, what am I going to talk about in the commentaries this week? You know, I got one or two things I want to discuss, but, you know, I got to fill up an hour sometimes too. So I ask people like you, I ask people like Misaki, I ask people like, you know, Shannon and others out there, and they give me these great ideas, right?
Misaki's full of them, man. He's always got interesting intel. Yeah.
I call him Misaki Sensei, actually. And so he says, well, you look at the normies, as he calls them, and this, there's starting to be a greater gulf, a greater divide between aware people and the normies, right? And how the normies have become like this cyborg kind of automaton Borg collective kind of thing, where they all think alike. They all have, driven by the same fears. No herd immunity. It's like, our vaccines don't work unless you take the vaccines. You see? And they're transferring the fear is morphing into rage at those who don't want to go along with the Borg collective, you see? And so the Greys have basically transferred, and others like the Greys transferred, that Borg-like hive consciousness fear programming into humans. And what's interesting also is when the Greys, and I'm glad you brought this up too, when the Greys look into the eyes of somebody with those big black eyes, and the people, they describe, well, it can siphon out all my memories, everything back to my childhood when I was sitting there sucking my thumb.
It's a form of enchantment.
It's a form of enchantment, it is. It sucks out all the memories and the emotions that go along with it, okay? And also, when people say, and there's these armchair alien abduction researchers, you always hear this, oh yeah, the aliens, the Greys, they're interested in our emotions, but what does that really mean? It's not just where they'll re-abduct somebody and then make them hold like this, it's sometimes a hideous looking cross between a human baby and a gray baby, and, you know, we're supposed to stand there and hold and nurture this thing and love on it, and they stand there, Borg collective, kind of emotionless, right? And they're supposed to learn from this in some way, but it goes beyond that, where Barbara Bartholik figured this out years ago, where they would pit children in what she calls the Breed Out the Love program, where they'll literally pit children into these gladiatorial matches, where one kid will be, he'll have the rage programming, the rage lizard brain part of him activated, and the other kid will have the fear victim part of his brain activated. And so the rage-filled kid will thump on the fear ridden kid, and the aliens will be standing around along with other kids, and the aliens will be standing along there feeding and like absorbing all that, and probably taking it into some kind of machinery too. Because when Ra talks about how so much of this is kind of like Borg cube technology based, he's not just whistling Dixie, because some of the really world class psychics that I've worked with, we've done work together, and we found in some of these other dimensions, we've spied on like the mantis beings with their machines, with their hoses and attachments plugged into our reality, where they're just feeding off all the misery that they, the Greys and the Draco, create, right? Through the hybridization, through all the wars and rumors of wars. They literally have machines, folks, that plug into our dimension, and to the eyes of a mystic or a seer, these machines seem to have hoses, tendrils that plug into our reality. Down to every apartment, every living room, the whole planet. They feed off all this miasma of pain and suffering and humiliation that we feel. And it's like it nourishes them. But it's all, if you notice, it's all the wrong lower end of the spectrum feelings and emotions. It's not the empowering ones of joy and abundance and contentment and true love. Oh, no, no, no. Can't have that. No way. Because that empowers us, and it doesn't nourish them, because if anything, it would short circuit them, right? It's not the kind of thing that nourishes them because they're lower fourth dimensional, hyperdimensional parasites. So I'm glad you mentioned this aspect of the energy and emotional harvesting that the Greys and others do. For example, the reptilian Draco hybrids in the guise of the, in our example, let's say an abusive male who routinely thumps on and beats up his partner, right?
Yeah.
The entity will not only feed off his rage and promote and goad him into going into these rages, but it'll feed off of the fear, the pain, the humiliation of the female victim in our example, because they leave nothing. They leave nothing on the platter. Even all this fake hallelujah breakdown stuff in a lot of these Abrahamic churches, right? It's like that's being fed off of too, because that's all going back to Yahweh, the reptilian blood god. It's all going back to Enki, all that, you know, praising and hallelujah breakdowns in the Orthodox churches. And I felt that. I've been in those Orthodox church settings and in what were supposed to be non-denominational worship settings at business meetings, but turned out to be, you know, hell and brimstone. If you don't come up here to give your soul and give your life and to the Lord, you're going to go to hell, right? And you feel that. You feel that pull, that tug on your heart center.
It's all fallen worship. Semyaza or Azazel or even Baphomet, it's all the same being. And if you're praying to basically androgynous, hermaphrodite type being, I mean, these are beings that they're trying to bring back of old. I mean, these are beings from possibly Lemuria or Atlantis that when there were four-armed, two-faced creatures, I mean, that were male females that had, you know, one head but three eyes and two faces, the front and the back. And, you know, these are old beings that you can see in Hindu lore today. You can see remnants of this.
Oh, yeah, it's Greek mythology, too. All kinds of critters, you know, because of all the cloning and the hybridization that the ETs off-world and also in the Atlantean days and Lemurian days, there was clones and hybrids all over the place on the surface. There were on the surface coexisting. There were giants. There were little people. There were people like us, our size,
I think they all interbreeded. I think that there was pygmy races at both of the poles, the North and the South Pole. And, you know, we acquire knowledge from these beings, even unlawful knowledge, if you want to call it, maybe stuff, knowledge that we weren't supposed to have. We're a vexed species, James. I mean, we are vexed because of how they created us. I mean, we are, you know, I always say it, like, dogs do, or knows what dogs do, cats know what dogs do, but then you got this human, this weird, complicated being that we don't even know where we came from, what we are. I mean, it's so interesting and so complicated.
It is, and also, because of the fear-based programming and the left-brained logical science itself is nothing more than a religion, because it's all bogus anyway, but the fear-based programming and everything on top of that that's overlain, how much of a controlling factor it is, because humans do things that no other animal on Earth does. Yeah. And I talked about this on Patricia Farrington's very fine show the other day. For example, how humans willingly bring their children to get hammered by dozens of vaccines. If the kid somehow slips through the cracks and doesn't die, it's going to be maimed and distorted, you know, for life. It'll be a soul trapped in this little body. Right?
Yep.
And those parents, you know, those parents also, some of them are going to wind up, and completely shamelessly, they're going to wind up resenting their autistic kids. Oh, I wish you'd never been born. Yeah, too bad for them. They were born with you as a parent. And they wound up in that state because divine source gave you, Mr. and Mrs. Parent, the divine responsibility of nurturing and caring for this child, but you let them do this to the kid, and now you're blaming the kid for being a burden on you. Shame on you. Right? But think about it. What other animal does that? Does, like, the parents of a newborn doe, do they take it out to a wolf pack and, here's an offering, you know, a sacrifice, leave the rest of us alone? You don't see this in any other animal. I can't think of a single other species on this planet that has lost the survival instinct, where they don't even recognize the nature of the multiple threat environment around them. And they just get pulled by that figurative, like, ring through their nose into this calamity, this disaster, into this hoax, into this false flag terrorism, into this war, right? And also, I wanted to comment on, while we still got time left in this first first half. It's been a ripper of a first half, and really looking forward to the second half. Is more and more people are talking about, and I'd like, you know, your thoughts about this, if you're aware of it, Raw, is those with mystical third eye, etheric vision, they've been seeing what has been described as this kind of big-headed, multi-tendrilled octopus-looking creature, for lack of a better term. And this octopus creature has some kind of connection to AI.
Oh, my but God. It's also, this up. Yes.
It's
okay.
Also organic, too, where people that have this mystical third-eye vision, they can see it like... like as big as the solar system, and just wrapping wrapping its tentacles around the entire solar system. And interesting, is it the National Reconnaissance Office, one of those multi-billion-dollar budget spook agencies? Yeah, I think it is NRO. They're the ones that build the spy satellites, and they work closely with NSA. In their logo, they show this big octopus creature with its tentacles wrapped around the whole planet, right? And so more and more people are seeing this octopus creature and variations of it. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, and you know what? I had an experience like this in the astral with a being like this. Before I tell you about that, it reminds me, just saying it, of all these huge type entities. There's a being called Ilapatra, who was a great naga that was 800 miles long and hung over towns in ancient India. And even Apophis was known as the sevenfold serpent, who had many thousands of heads and, you know, heads, and it was possibly 700 miles long. And, you know, even on Mount Meru was the giant serpent Shesha that coiled around the whole earth. I mean, there's knowledge of these beings. And when I recently, a couple weeks ago, I even did a video on it on my YouTube channel, I figured out that it must be my Merkaba, this transportation device between realms, because usually in my astral time, in my dream time, I could fly. But then lately, I've been traveling in this device, and it's like a box sometimes. When I'm driving, I'm like self-drive mode, and I'll be driving on the street, telling it where to go, and then I'll be like fly mode, and then I'm flying. And not too long ago, I was flying, and I was above all this bubbling water, and it was like a yellowish, greenish atmosphere and clouds and bubbles everywhere, like bubbling water. And then I was talking to this flying machine I was in, this transportation device. I was interfaced with it. It was connected to my pulse of my heart and the beating of my heart and my mind. And we were talking and interacting, and it was telling me, oh, we got to stop for a minute because something's up ahead. And we pulled down this tunnel, and the water was in front of me and was bubbling. And then we saw something moving in the water, like this little thing was moving in the water. And then all of a sudden, this huge tendril came out of nowhere and snapped this thing out of the water. And this thing was huge. I mean, Earth size, this monster. And it was like almost like a dragon half octopus type being. And when you said that, it rang real true to me, because like, when I saw that, it was a monster size. Like, I couldn't put parameters on how big it was. It was just a monster. And it reminded me of old tales of these big naga, or these big beings like the Apophis and Leviathan. And these big beings like that are said to have thousands of heads, or seven heads, and all these tendrils. And it could possibly be evoking... You know, the Bible says there's two Leviathans, and one was killed. So there's one left. So maybe it's something to do with bringing this Leviathan back, and it's emerging from the cosmic sea.
What's happening also, and I talked about this in this week's commentary, and I've talked about it many times, as have others, but then you overlay CERN onto this and all the harping and everything else. The worlds are merging. The veils are thinning. So
yes.
And because there's a simultaneous increase in the frequency, it's kind of a paradoxical situation, Ra, where the Schumann resonance is spiking up. Last I heard, it was 30 plus, and then we have the intensified cosmic and gamma rays streaming in from the cosmic center. So I was talking to a friend of mine, Christine, about this just yesterday, and she pointed out that even the normies are being activated at some level, because even though they're dense, really densified, really kind of Borg collective, inadvertently, because these cosmic rays are streaming in, and because the Schumann resonance and, you know, the fundamental consciousness are changing, what's happening is some of these people, these normies, are starting to develop a third eye vision, right? Whereas before, that would have been completely walled off from them, right? But it's a form of third eye vision. I wouldn't say it's third eye vision. It's similar. Also, because the worlds are merging, more and more of these parasitic entities are coming over because they see it as a huge smorgasbord here. With all these, like, Borg collective consciousness people, all fear-based and ridden with fear and anxiety, they're coming over here because it's like a big buffet table for them. And so what's starting to happen, Ra, is more and more of these normies, and also because increasingly so much of the population is getting on meds that get them into these certain neurological brainwave states and certain energetic frequencies, they're seeing entities all over the place now. And the normies are ill-equipped to deal with this. You and I, it's like we take some of this stuff in stride. We already have because we're veterans of the cosmic wars. This is not our first barbecue. But like the normies out there that are just coming to grips with they're just being buffeted around left, right, and center by the system, right, from one catastrophe, one fear-based thing to another. Now all these entities and demons and whatnot are going to be flitting in and out of their field of vision. And some of them are going to go bonkers, basically.
Yep. And then, you know, before we close, I want to end with, you know, this first hour, and that letting you know that whether anyone likes it or not, the old Earth is dying. The new frequency is upon us, and a new Earth is rising. And coincidentally, I feel the year I had my near-death experience in 1987, I was about 10 years old. Is when this new frequency, I feel, arrived on this planet. And from 1987 to about 2012, ending in December 2012, that new frequency came. And now, since 2012, this new Earth is arising. And if we don't spiritually evolve with it and don't let it become more metal-like, more terraformed for these Draco, these beings, then we will get stuck and get lost in the dust, basically, if we don't start to spiritually evolve. And those that are working on their soul and, you know, vibrating at a higher frequency will benefit from this new frequency. But those that stuck in the old Earth and get stuck in that old frequency will really have a hard time. And I feel like that even certain, like, dolphins and whales and certain beings like that you see on this planet, they create a certain sound and vibration that holds our planet together, certain frequencies, and that they were from Atlantis. And before Atlantis, maybe you want to say it was the demise, before the demise of Atlantis, that these beings were encoded with information to give to us. And they were supposed to pass on this information telepathically and genetically to us. And now they're beaching themselves and killing themselves because they realize that this frequency has passed and that this new Earth is here and that whatever information was going to get passed, that we should have got it by now. Otherwise, we're in trouble.
Yes, that's a very good point. And I did a commentary some time ago about, you know, are we already in the fourth dimension? Absolutely we are. Because if you're standing surrounded by a bunch of normies who were trying to shame and guilt you for not wanting to have a bunch of toxic ingredients jabbed into you and your children, right? That's like a weird, hellish scenario when you think about it. It's like, again, like there's no other life form on Earth that through manipulation kills itself the way that humans do. So we already are in the fourth dimension. That's the problem. And so those of us that have this higher dimensional perspective, we can step back, see what, you know, the multiple threat environment for what it is, see that there's a logjam also, Ra. And there's a beautiful movie out there that I always encourage people to see. It's called Delivering Milo. It's starring at the time he was a young Hollywood kid. God knows what he was subjected to, but recently the guy had a mysterious death. It's the same guy when he was a little older. He played the young Chekhov in the new Star Trek movies, right? He played
Was that kid that played in Taken as well with Spielberg?
Yes, I think it's the same kid, right?
Yeah, he was in Taken as well. That series,
So he was in a movie called Delivering Milo. Basically, he was an angel who didn't want to be incarnated on Earth. He didn't want to be.
Let me find out if it's the same. Did he, like, mysteriously die by getting pinned against the gate of his
He was the guy that played the Chekhov character in the new spate of Star Trek movies.
Star Trek, right? Yeah.
He played the young Chekhov. Anyway, he's dead now.
Good
he
actor.
Died.
He's a good. He's a good actor. He's a good,
Good yeah. Actor. So anyway, back when he was a kid, he played this angel called Milo, who, you know, spoiler alert, he didn't want to be born on Earth. He took a look around and said, "No way, Jose!" Right? And because you look at this in opposites, and I've betrayed myself to look at things in opposites, and you know what kind of underlying message is here. Basically, by refusing to be incarnated into Earth. As a young baby, as a newborn, he created a logjam because he didn't want to be born. All these pregnant mothers all over the earth were not able to give birth, and so for a 24-hour period, right, no woman on earth, pregnant woman, gave birth, and it created this logjam. And so I see that as a metaphor. Where
it's weird you brought him up. I was just talking about him the other day with my best friend and my assistant. Talking about. Yeah.
Well, think of the Earth, and George Kavassilis and others talk about the Earth as being like the galactic womb, right? Where it's all coming down right here in our little neck of the multiverse. If we don't dismantle this soul harvesting recyclement process, if we don't, you know, have this transition, and, you know, I would like to do what I can to save the old Earth too, but also this new Earth and the souls that will be freed and go with it, if that process is not facilitated, this planet and all the souls will be plunged into another long nightmarish cycle.
The Anu Recycle Center.
That's right. The moon, the Saturn matrix, the soul harvesting that's going on. And so that's what I see. When I watch that movie, Delivering Milo, I see it as a metaphor of what's happening to this solar system and all the souls that are basically trapped on it. Anyhow, we've reached the end of a very interesting first segment with my buddy, Ra Castaldo. Ra, for the benefit of our listeners, could you tell them how they could get a hold of you and where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can find me at themysticalspiral.com, and I do a show called Spiral Radio every Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, at paraxradionetwork.com. And also you can find me on YouTube at Exploring the Ka with host Ra Castaldo. And if you need to email me, you'll find my email address on my website, and I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and everything. And definitely subscribe to the Cosmic Switchboard to check out Hour 2 and all of James's inside intel, and his mine as well.
As Ross says, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard, please sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.
Spiral out.
Spiral out.